Demons, Fyodor Dostoevsky. Chapter 3. The Sins of Others. About a week had passed, and the position had begun to grow more complicated. I may mention in passing that I suffered a great deal during that unhappy week, as I scarcely left the side of my affianced friend in the capacity of his most intimate confidant. What weighed upon him most was the feeling of shame, though we saw no one all that week and sat indoors alone. But he was even ashamed before me, and so much so that the more he confided to me, the more vexed he was with me for it. He was so morbidly apprehensive that he expected that everyone knew about it already, the whole town, and was afraid to show himself, not only at the club, but even in his circle of friends. He positively would not go out to take his constitutional till well after dusk, when it was quite dark. A week passed, and he still did not know whether they were betrothed or not, and could not find out for a fact, however much he tried. He had not yet seen his future bride, and did not know whether she was to be his bride or not, did not in fact know whether there was anything serious in it at all. Varvara Petrovna, for some reason, resolutely refused to admit him to her presence. In answer to one of his first letters to her, and he wrote a great number of them, she begged him plainly to spare her all communications with him for a time, because she was very busy, and having a great deal of the utmost importance to communicate to him, she was waiting for a more free moment to do so, and that she would let him know in time when he could come to see her. She declared she would send back his letters unopened, as they were simple self-indulgence. I read that letter myself. He showed it to me. Yet all this harshness and indefiniteness were nothing compared with his chief anxiety. That anxiety tormented him to the utmost and without ceasing. He grew thin and dispirited through it. It was something of which he was more ashamed than of anything else, and of which he would not on any account speak, even to me. On the contrary, he lied on occasion, and shuffled before me like a little boy, and at the same time he sent for me himself every day, could not stay 2 hours without me, needing me as much as air or water. Such conduct rather wounded my vanity. I need hardly say that I had long ago privately guessed this great secret of his, and saw through it completely. It was my firmest conviction at the time that the revelation of this secret, this chief anxiety of Stepan Trofimovitch's, would not have redounded to his credit, and therefore, as I was still young, I was rather indignant at the coarseness of his feelings and the ugliness of some of his suspicions. In my warmth, and I must confess in my weariness of being his confidant, I perhaps blamed him too much. I was so cruel as to try and force him to confess it all to me himself, though I did recognize that it might be difficult to confess some things. He, too, saw through me. That is, he clearly perceived that I saw through him, and that I was angry with him indeed. And he was angry with me, too, for being angry with him and seeing through him. My irritation was perhaps petty and stupid, but the unrelieved solitude of two friends together is sometimes extremely prejudicial to true friendship. From a certain point of view, he had a very true understanding of some aspects of his position, and defined it, indeed, very subtly on those points about which he did not think it necessary to be secret. "Oh, how different she was then," he would sometimes say to me about Varvara Petrovna. "How different she was in the old days, when we used to talk together. Do you know that she could talk in those days? Can you believe that she had ideas in those days, original ideas? Now everything has changed. She says all that's only old-fashioned twaddle. She despises the past. Now she's like some shopman or cashier. She has grown hard-hearted, and she's always cross." "Why is she cross now, if you are carrying out her orders?" I answered. He looked at me subtly. "Cher ami." If I had not agreed, she would have been dreadfully angry. Dreadfully. But yet less than now that I have consented. He was pleased with this saying of his, and we emptied a bottle between us that evening. But that was only for a moment. Next day he was worse and more ill-humoured than ever. But what I was most vexed with him for was that he could not bring himself to call on the Drostovs, as he should have done on their arrival, to renew the acquaintance of which, so we heard, they were themselves desirous, since they kept asking about him. It was a source of daily distress to him. He talked of Lizaveta Nikolaevna with an ecstasy which I was at a loss to understand. No doubt he remembered in her the child whom he had once loved. But besides that, he imagined for some unknown reason that he would at once find in her company a solace for his present misery, and even the solution of his more serious doubts. He expected to meet in Lizaveta Nikolaevna an extraordinary being, and yet he did not go to see her, though he meant to do so every day. The worst of it was that I was desperately anxious to be presented to her and to make her acquaintance, and I could look to no one but Stepan Trofimovitch to effect this. I was frequently meeting her in the street, of course, when she was out riding, wearing a riding habit and mounted on a fine horse and accompanied by her cousin, so-called, a handsome officer, the nephew of the late General Drostov. And these meetings made an extraordinary impression on me at the time. My infatuation lasted only a moment, and I very soon afterwards recognized the impossibility of my dreams myself, but though it was a fleeting impression, it was a very real one, and so it may well be imagined how indignant I was at the time with my poor friend for keeping so obstinately secluded. All the members of our circle had been officially informed from the beginning that Stepan Trofimovitch would see nobody for a time, and begged them to leave him quite alone. He insisted on sending round a circular notice to this effect, though I tried to dissuade him. I went round to everyone at his request, and told everybody that Varvara Petrovna had given our old man, as we were all used to calling Stepan Trofimovitch among ourselves, a special job, to arrange in order some correspondence lasting over many years, that he had shut himself up to do it, and I was helping him. Liputin was the only one I did not have time to visit, and I kept putting it off. To tell the real truth, I was afraid to go to him. I knew beforehand that he would not believe one word of my story, that he would certainly imagine that there was some secret at the bottom of it, which they were trying to hide from him alone. And as soon as I left him, he would set to work to make inquiries and gossip all over the town. While I was picturing all this to myself, I happened to run across him in the street. It turned out that he had heard all about it from our friends, whom I had only just informed. But strange to say, instead of being inquisitive and asking questions about Stepan Trofimovitch, he interrupted me when I began apologizing for not having come to him before, and at once passed to other subjects. It is true that he had a great deal stored up to tell me. He was in a state of great excitement, and was delighted to have got hold of me for a listener. He began talking of the news of the town, of the arrival of the governor's wife, with new topics of conversation, of an opposition party already formed in the club, of how they were all in a hubbub over the new ideas, and how charmingly this suited him, and so on. He talked for a quarter of an hour, and so amusingly that I could not tear myself away. Though I could not endure him, yet I must admit he had the gift of making one listen to him, especially when he was very angry at something. This man was, in my opinion, a regular spy from his very nature. At every moment he knew the very latest gossip and all the trifling incidents of our town, especially the unpleasant ones, and it was surprising to me how he took things to heart that were sometimes absolutely no concern of his. It always seemed to me that the leading feature of his character was envy. When I told Stepan Trofimovitch that same evening of my meeting Liputin that morning and our conversation, the latter, to my amazement, became greatly agitated and asked me the wild question, "Does Liputin know or not?" I began trying to prove that there was no possibility of his finding it out so soon, and that there was nobody from whom he could hear it. But Stepan Trofimovitch was not to be shaken. "Well, you may believe it or not," he concluded unexpectedly at last, "but I'm convinced that he not only knows every detail of our position, but that he knows something else besides, something neither you nor I know yet, and perhaps never shall, or shall only know when it's too late, when there's no turning back." I said nothing, but these words suggested a great deal. For 5 whole days after that, we did not say one word about Liputin. It was clear to me that Stepan Trofimovitch greatly regretted having let his tongue run away with him and having revealed such suspicions before me.